Okay, it's time, so let's go ahead and get started. Before I begin, we are doing some research for MDOP Futures, and the hostesses out front actually have a couple surveys, actually one survey, there are two of them. If you could just raise your hands if you're interested in participating. It's basically, we're trying to find out like what people are doing with the MDOP products and so on, and based the research that we do on this basically is going to apply to the next calendar year, what we do to MDOP. So it's not just AppV specific, but it's all of MDOP. So it would be great if you could participate. This is your chance to get your voice heard with the core engineering team and the marketing team. Just raise your hands and they'll hand those out. And then when you're done with them at the end of the talk, if you could hand them back to the hostesses at the exits, that would be great. Okay, so welcome to this talk. This talk is about migrating from AppV 4.6 to AppV 5. It's an interesting process that we'll talk about, kind of the ins and outs and so forth. My name is Matthias Gates. I'm a program manager on the AppV team. I've been on the AppV team for about 5 years. I joined when they were just releasing AppV 4.5. And so I was involved in the 5.0 kind of from the beginning in that, and we worked on it probably for 2 or 3 years altogether when we released it. I'm joined here by a couple colleagues. We're out of Boston, so the time difference isn't as bad as it is for those out of Redmond. Just out of curiosity, how many people here have deployed AppV 4.6? Okay, that's a good number. And how about AppV 5.0? Small gathering, okay? And how many people have looked at AppV 5.0? Okay, a few more. So that's about what we're seeing when we go out and talk to customers. Lots of people are in 4.6. They want to go to 5.0, but you know it has its challenges, and those are the things that we're going to cover in today's talk. One of the things, so when we released 5.0, for those of you who've looked at it, we've changed the package format. We're running in some limitations with 4.6 that we had to address in future versions. And so because of those limitations, we said, okay, we're going to go with a new format. So that in itself means that you have to convert the packages. So what this talk is about are some of the tools and features that the product offers that you have available that you can use during the process, and some of the decisions. So what some of the people are kind of uncomfortable with are, you know, what are some of the unknowns, which we haven't done a great job in terms of documenting, but that we're going to work actually over the summer. The core engineering team is going to produce some blogs on that, because people get very uncomfortable when they're unknown unknowns. They don't really know what they should worry about. Hopefully we'll provide some clarity around this in today's discussion as well. I'm going to assume that you have basic AppV knowledge. So in other words, you know what publishing refresh is, you know what the components are for AppV, and you kind of understand the end-to-end flow. I'm not really going to go into that, but I will go into what 5.0 has, and again, that there's an assumption there. The other thing is that about 50% of this consists of demos. So what do we mean what did we build AppV5 on? So we've got the kind of traditional three, you know, pillars that new releases are built on: integrated platform, flexible virtualization, and modern management. And what does that mean exactly? And so what we found is, so AppV 4.6 was built, originally it was built for RDS deployments, where isolation was an absolute plus so that you didn't have these silos. It made the deployment of applications easier and more cost effective. But as AppV kind of moved towards desktops, maybe that isolation wasn't as desired as it was in RDS deployments. So what we've done is we've provided the capability kind of turn the dial on the isolation so that you have more control. It's a more granular control. You can still have it if you want, but you can also kind of turn it down if you want. So you have that kind of control. The other thing that we've done is that we've taken some of the features that people really liked in 4.6 and really made them, I'll call it, made them first-class citizens in the world of AppV. And so, for example, dynamic suite composition. People liked it conceptually. Dynamic suite composition is where you can run multiple packages in one virtual environment. People liked it, but it was difficult to administer. So we came out with what we call connection groups, which is an independent document that does the same thing, but you can manage that independent document in a much easier way, end-to-end, from the server all the way down to the client. And actually, this afternoon, a little bit later on this afternoon, Andy Surratt's going to be talking about Office and AppV, and he's going to actually show you what a connection group looks like. It's a very simple, small document that just says, here are the packages. The other thing that we did is we introduced what we call virtual application extension, which is, if you think of file type associations and shortcuts, virtual application extension is that generalized. So we still have individual subsystems, but you can disable those so that they're not isolated. So we'll talk a little bit about those as well. And then the last one here is modern management. So we used to have MMC snap-ins and kind of proprietary scripting of SFT MIME. We've now gone to PowerShell all the way through from the server down to the sequencer to the client. And you can do everything in PowerShell that you can, for example, in the server GUI. You can do everything in PowerShell in the client as well as you can in the client UI. And then the last thing is that we have switched to a web-based UI for the server. So we took 4.6 and took everything that people really wanted and moved it forward. And I'll just add that AppV5 was a pretty significant investment for the team, that we really wanted to kind of invest and produce a platform that we could build on going forward. So we're 100% committed to basically taking this up. So what do those three pillars, how do they manifest themselves? So we'll compare and contrast what we had in 4.6 with what we have in 5.0. So in 4.6, everyone knows it, we had the Q drive. This was very, very hard to manage in enterprises. People had to kind of find, you know, a drive letter that was available. It's really tough. We've gone towards standards now, so the files, the packages, are actually mounted right in NTFS. So you can actually take a look at them and see them without going to a Q drive. So you don't need a dedicated drive letter anymore. The 4 GB size limit, people were actually really bumping into this. If you start looking at packages like Office or Visual Studio, those packages start bumping up against this, or AutoCAD, you know, large applications. And in 5.0, we got rid of the 4 GB size limit. So what a lot of customers are doing, for example, when they're moving from 4.6 to 5.0, they're starting with some of these applications that they couldn't process in 4.6. They really had to jump through all these hoops to make it work. Now they just sequence them into one package and deploy it. Isolation, we talked about that a little bit, virtual application extension. So file type associations and shortcuts, we've generalized it. And I'll also add that under the covers, we've made it simpler to continue to add subsystems. So it used to be in 4.6, there were file type associations and shortcuts. And those were two, they were implemented very different ways. So if we want to add more subsystems, it was actually very challenging to do this. But in the code base, we've made this simple. Dynamic suite composition, we talked about this, it's now replaced by virtual application connection. Read-only shared cache, I don't know how many people have had experience with that. Again, customers, they like the concept, but boy, this one was really hard to administer. So what we've done is we've come out with what we call shared content store, which is a very, very simple way of you toggle the client, you put it in a mode, and everything else stays the same. So from the admin point of view, there's no difference between administering a client that's operating in shared content store mode and a client that's not operating in shared content store mode. So you can basically push out packages to all these clients that might be configured in different ways. So from an admin point of view, it's really made it very, very simple. Limited command line scripting is SFT MIME for everyone who's from 4.6. We've replaced this with PowerShell. And the last thing, I mentioned this already, we went from an installed management console to now a web-based management console. So what does the big picture look like when you're going from 4.6 to 5.0? Here's an example in this particular case. It's an AppV infrastructure example. Let's say you've got your 4.6 server. You have a package published to the PC at the bottom. So what you first need to do is actually take that package and convert it, and then add it to the management server, to the 5.0 management server. The next thing, so that package converter is one of the key technologies that we have. Now, I'm going to add here that it's not a turnkey process, okay? There's a perception that people tend to think, first they're going to take all their 4.6 packages, run this job over the weekend, end up with all these 5.0 packages, and then just do a hard switch on their clients. And the coexistence is actually what really helps you in that case in terms of migrating, making it a gradual transition. Now, in this particular case, we've got the converted package now on the 5.0 server. On the client, you want to install 4.6 SP2 and the AppV5 client. Those two AppV clients can coexist on the same machine. What this means is that you can have all your 4.6 packages, and then over time you can move your users over to 5.0. But it's a gradual transition. It's not a hard cutover. And then what you'll do is you'll entitle the package and have it go down to the server, to the client, the 5.0 client. From the end user's point of view, there's no difference. They just continue to use the application. So let's talk about package conversion. This is one of the technologies. The other one is the coexistence. So package conversion converts 4.6 packages to 5.0 packages. We realize that people have made a significant investment in 4.6. In many cases, they've got hundreds, if not thousands, of packages, and they want to migrate to 5.0. Using coexistence and conversion, you can gradually make that transition. So it's one tool, and it's installed with the sequencer. And I'll add also that it's not necessarily a turnkey tool. So there are some things in 4.6 that don't translate to 5.0, and we'll talk about those in a few minutes. In terms of packaging and package conversion on version 5, the sequencer hasn't changed. For those of you who've played with it, it looks identical. Obviously, the output is a whole different format. And the other thing that I'll say is that the package converter is pure PowerShell based. So you can do batch jobs and so forth. So it's very handy if you've got a whole bunch of packages. You can convert as many of them as you can, and then the rest of them you may have to do some special handling. You can also do combinations. So for example, you might convert your packages and then open them up in the sequencer and make some additional changes. And do that kind of a thing. So you have a lot of flexibility. So before we jump into the first demo, remember that with PowerShell, you have verbs followed by nouns, so we follow that convention exactly. All right. Okay, so what I have here is that I have a a plain VM here. It's Windows 8, and I've installed the sequencer on that. When you install the sequencer, you get the package converter also. Since the package converter is command line only, it's PowerShell. You've got two commands. It's very simple. You can test and you can convert. Nothing too fancy there. So let's take a look at this 4.6 package. You'll recognize it's a 4.6 package. You've got the SFT file. Remember that file contains the it contains the files. It contains all the registry, but it's a proprietary format. We publish the format, but it's proprietary. That means that you need special tools to work with this. So what we're going to do is we'll convert this file, and then we'll take a look at what the output was. So first off, let's take a look at how test works. So I've got the old packages. Okay. So what test does is that it goes through and it looks at the file, at the package, and is going to indicate whether it's a good candidate or it's not a good candidate. Now, in this particular case, you can see that it reports back, well, the package doesn't have any major errors. So this would be a good candidate to run through the package conversion process. Let's look at one that is not a good candidate. So I've got Adobe Reader 10 here, and when it tests it, it actually gave us an error, not a warning. The error says that one of the applications is targeted for an unsupported operating system. So 5.0 is supported on Windows 7 and beyond, and Server 2008 R2 and beyond. In this particular case, there's an application in here that is relying on Vista. So since we don't support it, it won't work. So let's do the conversion here. Yep. Oh, you're right. Yep. So this is converting the package that we tested just a couple minutes ago. So what it's doing is it's cracking the SFT file, it's pulling all of that content out of there and repackaging it into the new format. So that succeeded. Let's take a look at that. So it just produced four files. There's the .appv file. This is now the new file format. This is a zip-based derivative, and we'll take a look at that in just a minute. It produced an installer for standalone deployments, and then it produced a couple XML documents, which we'll talk about in a minute as well, the deployment config and the user config. Those are two documents that we've added with 5.0. All right, so since the package is zip-based, we can rename it. Okay, and Windows understands zip-based. So now what we can do is we can actually go browse the contents of this file. Now, one thing I'll note is that you can browse the contents of the file, but you can't edit the file. So you can't go put files in there and then save it back out, rename it to appv. You can take a look at it. And the reason you can't edit it is because there are certain properties to this that appv needs. So for example, the block map. That's our streaming engine needs to know which block a certain file is in. So if you're going to stream it down on demand, it has to know where to look. If you add a file and save it, the block map's not going to get updated. So you have to use the sequencer for this. But it's handy for going and taking a look if you're troubleshooting. So some of these files, like I said, have been produced by the sequencer and are used for housekeeping. And then inside here, you can see that there are a number of DLLs. Now, if you go look under the VFS tab, the virtual file system is a client component, which basically we say that it blends two different namespaces. So it takes the package namespace with the system namespace and blends them together so that the application sees a combination of those two views. Now, in here, what you're looking at are folder IDs. These are well-known folder IDs. So when you deploy this package, for example, program files x86, you deploy this package, our virtual file system will show, if WinZip goes and looks in program files x86, it will see a directory called Windows space sidebar. And it will see all the other files that also already exist on the system. So that's what the virtual file system does. And so there are a number of directories in here that you can see. The other thing that I'll point out is that this is just a normal, this is just a standard registry file. So what you can do is you can actually take a look at this. You can take a look at it by just taking and just mounting it via InRegEdit. Really, really simple. So now if we go look here, you see it down here. And now you can take a look and see what was captured by the, in this case, the conversion process. So machine is HKLM, user is HKCurrentUser. And you can basically, what you can do just like you can with the files, is you can use standard Windows tools to go browse through this. You'll notice this one has kind of an interesting string in here, appv current user sid. This is what we call, inside the team, we call it a token. So this is what makes the package portable. Because when I converted it, it converted under my SID. If I deploy it to my machine, that works fine. But if it gets deployed to someone else's machine and another user, you want their SID to get used, not your SID. So this is a token that, again, makes the package portable to whoever you deploy it to. All right. I think what I'll do is... So standard tools that standard Windows tools basically understand the format. Now, let's take a quick look at batch operations. So what you can do is, like I mentioned, if you have many, many packages, what you can do is you might want to test them all. So you can just say, you just do the star. It's very simple. And what this does is it just goes and recurses down into the tree and finds all these packages and will produce a report as to which ones are good candidates for converting. And you can also, similarly, you can convert a whole bunch. So I could do the exact same thing. We'll put them there. I could do the exact same thing. Now it's converting this one, it will succeed. If it fails, it just continues on. So that's a nice thing because if you don't want it to stop on the first failure, you just basically want to make this kind of an opportunistic exercise where it just cranks out the ones that it can convert. Let's wait for this to... So again, it's just going through all the packages and converting them. So it succeeded on this one, and now it just keeps right on going with others. By the way, now notice, I'll stop it right here. Notice that in this particular case, this was with Adobe Reader 10. So this was the one that we tested. It detected the error and just kept right on going. So this is, it's handy for the batch conversions. So let me just get this set up for the next demo. And let's go back to our talk. All right. So that's it. That was an introduction to our package conversion process, and also a little bit on the target file format. So it's the standards, it's the batch processing, and it's the ability to just keep right on going in the case of a failure. Remember to test first, but if you want, you can just kick off the converter. The converter will not stop if it hits an error. Pay special attention to the warnings and errors. Since it keeps going, it's easy to not watch those. We try to make those informative so that you know what needs to be done if you do hit one of these. This is around the batch conversion. I'm not going to go into this in great depth, but again, you can do a single package, you can do a few packages, or you can do a whole bunch of packages. You have a lot of flexibility. For the package conversion, not all packages can be converted. So this is just kind of your checklist, and you all have access to these slides. This is your checklist for what you can convert. So it's got to be a 4.5 and beyond package. You have to be able to open it up in the 4.6 sequencer and run it on the 4.6 client. So if your package doesn't meet these requirements, then it's not going to work with the converter. There are also, in 5.0, we don't support 16-bit applications. So if you've got 16-bit applications, you cannot run those in 5.0. So you can either, if you require those, you can coexist, continue to run them in 4.6, but just don't, you won't be able to convert them. The other thing are, these are some of the considerations of what you need to think about if you're doing conversion. So we've changed how some of the things are done. So we don't have OSD files anymore. You saw the converted package didn't have OSD files, it had the four files. We've put the scripts now, they go into either the deployment config or the user config file. If your OSDs have scripts, we can't convert those because you can have many OSDs for a package and we don't know if you want to keep them or not keep them. So the converter always will emit a warning and error out rather than take a guess and produce a package that you may not have intended. If you've got registry overrides in the OSDs, those as well are not going to be converted, as well as environment variables. And dynamic suite configuration, DSC, doesn't get converted either. So for those of you who've used DSC in 4.6, you know you have to modify the package itself for it to work in DSC. With connection groups, you don't modify the packages. You just author a new document that says, here are the packages in the connection group. So if you've got a DSC package, it won't convert it. But again, we pay attention to the verbose messages. We try to tell you exactly what to do. Okay. So let's talk about dynamic configuration. So this we introduced with 5.0. And what dynamic configuration allows you to do is take a package that you've produced and make small changes to that package when it runs on the client. So you make small tweaks to the virtual environment. I mentioned registry values and so forth. That's an example of what you could put in the dynamic configuration. So for example, you may be updating your packages on a specific cadence, or it might be a completely different team that needs to update the package. If you need to do something and push it out tomorrow to the users, use dynamic configuration. It gives you a lot of agility in terms of not being tied to the update for the packages. So you can basically, the other thing is you can target end users with it. And what that means is you can sequence once but deploy the package many ways. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. So let's talk about dynamic configuration. It modifies the package's virtual environment. And that's so it's on the client if you want to have more registry values show up or you want to override a registry value, for example, that's in a package, you can use it. You can use dynamic configuration or a lot. You can also disable entire subsystems if you want. And by subsystems, I mean shortcuts, file type associations, that type of thing. There are two different types. Remember, there are two files. There's a deployment configuration and a user configuration. The deployment configuration applies to all users on that machine. So you may want to push something out like produce it, create a new key under HKLM, for example, that will apply to all users. You push out a deployment configuration with that package, and it'll show up to all the users on that RDS machine. On the other hand, you may want to disable shortcuts for a particular user, which then you use the dynamic user configuration. And you can use those files in combination. So you might update the registry subsystem with the deployment configuration, but update the file type associations with the user configuration. So it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how to deploy that package in your company. And the biggest thing on this is that you don't need to resequence the package. So it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of how and when those small updates are made. Okay, so what is virtual application extension? So each subsystem that's supported shows up in the deployment configuration or in the user configuration. So it's an extension point, basically, that's registered natively. File type associations and shortcuts are a special case, right? It's like even at 4.6, when you add an application, you go in the Windows Start menu and you see it. That's an integration with the native system. And it integrates with any other native application. It can see it. Virtual applications, since they can see the native system, they can see it as well. So of these, the first two obviously are supported in 4.6. In 5.0, we've added a number of others. And the last one is actually one of the most promising, I think, which is COM local servers. So for example, if a package has a COM local server in it, it can register natively on the system and then be used by either other virtual applications or native applications. So it's a great way to deploy this. All right, so let's take a look at this. Okay, so this one, we have Adobe Reader 11 sequenced. We've also got a PDF document on the desktop. So we've not yet added it. A lot of warnings. We've not yet added it here. And so if we double click on this, it basically takes you to the default behavior. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to take this package and we're going to add it to the system. Then what we're going to do is we'll take it off, we'll put it back on with a modified user configuration file to show how we would disable the file type association. So we've got, this is your standard package that was produced by the sequencer. The appv package, we looked at that. And then we've got a few variations of dynamic deployment configuration and user configuration. Let's see, and this is demo, okay. All right, so what we're gonna do now is we're gonna go ahead and add this. Let me just show you all the commands that you have available from the appv client. Like I mentioned, you can do everything from PowerShell if you wish, and that's actually what we're going to do on this particular demo. So lots of options here. By the way, notice down here we've got groups. They're on par with packages. We've got connection groups in repair. So connection groups, like I said, are first-class citizens in the world of App V5. All right, so we're gonna add a package. I need to specify the path. Okay, it's the App V file. And just like in 4.6, you have to add it, you have to publish it. 5.0, that concept stays the same. And the way we're going to do it here is we're just going to pipe that command through to me, to the current user. So what this is, it adds it and then publishes it to the user. And you can see it right here in the report. It says, is published to user is true. Now if I go look here, the icon has changed. So if I double-click that, it's now using App V5. So it loads the primary feature block, just like in this, just like it does in 4.6. And then it launches and goes ahead and loads the application. So let's say that you wanted to see, so I'll show you one of the commands here actually that our users have found very handy. So if you want to see which virtual applications are running on the system, again, 4.6, I think there was possibly a resource kit tool that did this. But now you actually, you can use this command. This tells you that, okay, there are three processes. So evidently, Adobe Reader kicked off another couple processes when it launched. But let's say that you really want to see, this just kind of tells you, okay, these are three processes that are up and running. You know they're virtual, but you don't know, for example, which virtual environment are they in and so on. So what you can do, you can pipe this through again So what this told us, so it basically took the output of that and gave us some more information. So for each process, there's one of these blocks. It tells you who the user is who's running it. This is mySid. The other thing that I'll point out here is that there's a virtual environment version and package. So just like in 4.6, we had a package and a lineage of versions that followed after. In 5.0, we have the exact same thing. But we have a virtual environment version and package ID, and we've got a package ID or package version ID and version ID. So it's for the package and the virtual environment. Those are not necessarily the same thing. If this package, for example, is running in a connection group, the package ID will be different from the virtual environment in which it's running. And that then tells you, for example, if you had multiple packages running in the same virtual environment, you could use this to see which virtual environments those are in. So again, using these commands, you have a lot of power that you can and visibility into the system. Using, again, going back, standard tools, standard ways of administering this. All right, let's go ahead and take this off now. So just like I dumped this before, you can see now it's at 100%. I'm going to pipe this through. We're going to stop it. We're then going to unpublish it. And then we're going to remove it. Okay, really simple. Icon's gone. If we double-click this, basically the file type association reverted to what it was before. All right. Now what we're going to do is we're going to publish the same package, but we're going to use this user configuration. So let's see what the difference is between the user configuration that came out of the sequencer and the user configuration someone has edited for the demo here. All right, so this is the one that we started from. And this is the one that we're going to. And WinDiff, all WinDiff does, for those of you who have not used it, it's a tool that just shows you the differences between two files, two text files. Okay, so if you look at this, the file type association, the entire subsystem is set to false. And what this means is that when you push this package out to this user, because it's a user configuration, when you push that package out, that user will have no file type associations that are associated with this package. Okay? So it disabled the entire subsystem, or let's say you only want it to do a particular file type. Wow, it's really hard to read this, but this says PDF right here. You could go through and kind of surgically remove just the one file type association that you don't want to have associated. All right. So we'll use the same command line. Let's see. But we're going to specify that path. Okay. So the expectation here is that it's going to get added just like it did before. But you can see here the file type association is the same. So if we launch the package from the shortcut, it's going to launch it just like it always does normally. But if we double click on the PDF file, it gets loaded in the default or in the current file type association handler. Okay? But we can still take this PDF if we want to. There. And so it still opens fine. So people can still go and explicitly open it. But the file type association, if they double click on it, will not take and launch the virtual application. All right. So that was dynamic configuration. If we look at this, remember that there are two different types. There's deployment and user. Deployment is all users on the machine, users for a particular user. The deployment config needs elevation because it's specified as at an add package time, and it applies to all users. And user, it does not need elevation. It's specified when you publish. And you can use these in combination. Something I'll add is that the subsystem has these have subsystem granularity. Okay, what that means is if you disable the shortcuts in the user configuration, you can't override a couple of the shortcuts in the deployment configuration. So it's like if you're playing with the subsystems, you edit them in one or the other, but not both. So it's pretty straightforward. All right, let's talk a little bit about, why would you want to sequence? That's actually a question that we hear from a lot of customers. And actually, just to plug the Office talk that's going to happen later on this afternoon, for Office 2013, we've got something called the Office Deployment Tool, which is a turnkey process. And we've also got package accelerators for Office 2010. So I would encourage all of you actually to go to that talk. It's a really good talk. But why would you want to sequence as part of the migration? Well, it's either that the package isn't a good candidate, or you want to actually use the new, you want to use some of the new capabilities. So remember that list of all the virtual application extensions, in addition to file type associations and shortcuts. The package may have the capabilities, but since they didn't work in 4.6, they're not going to be exposed in 5.0. So what you may want, you can either resequence the package, or you can convert it and then just open up the package for upgrade and save it, and that will actually detect and save the extension points correctly. Okay, so I'm going to show you a very easy way of doing this. Since the converter is a command line tool, you probably want to do this. You don't want to fire up the sequencer and do a package upgrade. I don't know how many of these packages you may have to work with. So what you can do is you can use the sequencer. So this is the same VM as I had before. It's just saved out to a different snapshot. And these are the sequencer commands that you have available. Now, what you can do is you can take and update a package, but you may not actually want to install anything as part of that update, because all you want to do is open it and save it, and you detect that. So, but you have to specify that command line, that key to the command line. So what you want to do is, I'll show you just a very simple way of specifying a command line to satisfy the sequencer. Let's go over here. So I'm just going to specify a command line that doesn't do much of anything, but it works. Now what we can do, given that command line, this really won't do anything, but it executes and it exits. And the sequencer does that. It looks for the process to start and then waits for the process to finish. Now what we can do is we can say, we're going to specify the input path. It's the package that was sequenced earlier. We're going to specify the installer. Which is the batch file that we just created. And we're going to specify the name and the output. We'll put it in here. All right. So we kick this off. And rather than waiting for it to complete, I've got a snapshot just on the other side of it. It takes about maybe less than 5 minutes, but too long to kind of sit around and wait for it to complete. So all I did was just, like I said, I did it, created a snapshot just on the other side, so we can take a look at that. All right, so there it's completed. Now if we go take a look at this, if we look in the deployment config, you can see that it actually went through and detected all the subsystems, including ones that were not supported in APV 4.6. So APV 4.6, we had shortcuts, file type associations. But you know, URL protocols, app paths were not supported. You can see here, if you would have looked in the originally converted package, you would not have seen any of these. So all we did was take a converted package, opened it, saved it, and now we get all the benefits that 5.0 brings. So it's an easy way to bring those, to get those benefits and actually bring them forward on 5.0. So, all right. So I just have this included just so that you have it in the slide deck if you need to use it. And it makes the package upgrade turnkey. because you can use the same installers, the same blank.bat for any of the packages. Okay, coexistence. So what is coexistence? And if you really want to think of coexistence, it's technically, obviously, it's the ability to run the 4.6 SP2 client next to the 5.0 client. But it's also, it's a way that's transparent to your users for you to migrate your users from 4.6 to 5.0. And you can do this over a period of time. You might do it over, it might take a year for you to gradually migrate all your users over. So what it does is, because it does that, it introduces that element of time, it allows you to mitigate the risks associated with going from 4.6 to 5.0. Every week you can do a couple packages. And over time, you might start out at 4.6, this many at 5. Over time, you'll gradually move them all over to 5. At that point, you're done with the 4.6 client. So it allows you to stage the migration. It's not a hard cutover. It's not like you have to get all your packages to a state and then force your users to just, you know, bang, and it either all works or not doesn't work. And it auto-migrates the settings. So coexistence is it's isolated to the app, to the client, okay? You don't need the server. It works with SCCM. It works in standalone mode. It will work, you know, however you're deploying your packages. But it basically, again, it's a client-only setting. So let's run through that. Okay, so here I've got sorry about these warnings, they keep popping up. So what I did is I took WordViewer, a small app that's actually pretty good for demos. I've got a 4.6 version of WordViewer, and then I converted that to 5.0. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the 4.6 app, we're going to add it to the machine, we'll use it, and then we're going to you go to the management server, we're going to publish out the 5.0 word viewer and show you how that experience is seen by the user. So first off, we're going to add it using SFTMOIM, actually. So this is how you script it in 4.6. So we have to specify the manifest, and I'm going to use override URL. And we give it the SFT. So for those of you who've used 4.6, you probably are familiar with this. Now if I launch this, you've got the standard progress bar at the lower right. We're running this in 4.6. You know, it's continuing to stream behind the scenes. But what we'd really like to do is, let's say that Word Viewer had extensions that we want to basically take advantage of in 5.0, or you know, the company is migrating over. So what we're going to do is I'm going to show you how coexistence works. Now, coexistence keys off of something in the deployment configuration for the package, and that is this particular block right here. Okay, it says, and the package converter will put this in there automatically, but you can also put it in there manually if you want. You have to specify the managing authority section here. Specify the package name. The package name, that good, has to match the good for the package name in 4.6 exactly. because the two clients have to work in concert. The other thing is it says take over extension points from 4.6. You say true. Now it will basically, it'll take over those extension points. So let's switch our view over to the management server. All right, this is a management server. Here are a bunch of the packages. You'll see they have, none of them have been added yet. Let's go ahead and look at the management console. So you see it's web-based. This is no longer a snap-in. I'm not going to do the talk on the management server console, but this kind of gives you a quick view of what it looks like. What we're going to do is we're going to add the converted Word Viewer package. So we have it. This is actually the location where the clients are going to stream it from. So if we come down here, here's the Word Viewer app. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to copy the shortcut. Okay, we paste it in there. We add it. Now what it does is that it went through and it actually cracked that appv file and added it. Now you can see, I mean, the name is kind of short. It's Word Viewer. It's not published. The next thing we want to do is actually go through and entitle it. And we'll entitle it to, just like any other appv package, to the users in this particular case. Okay, we check that. Take that. We grant access. Still not published, however. So we've got it entitled. It's ready to be published. And we publish it. So now what will happen is that when a client does a publishing refresh against this server, it will get that application. Before we jump out of here, very quickly, I'm going to just show you. So like I said, we've got PowerShell everywhere. You could have done all these steps that I just did on the management server using PowerShell. So you have a lot of flexibility there. The other thing that I'm just going to show you quickly is if you're using, so the way that you have multiple publishing servers talking to one management server. The clients talk to the publishing servers. By default, the publishing servers only refresh every 10 minutes against the management server. This means that the package that I just added and entitled, I'd have to wait 10 minutes for those publishing servers to know about it. But for this demo, and if you've got a lab environment set up and you basically want to do it right away, what you do is you come in here and you set under software, Microsoft AppV publishing server. There's a value under here called the management server refresh interval. And by default, that's going to be 600. I set it to 10 seconds. So what that means is that every 10 seconds they're doing this. Obviously, there's a performance impact, but it means that you can publish it and turn around and then go head over to your client and get to it. So, all right. So let's now go back to the coexistence client. So we have this. You remember you needed the package that has the managing authority section in there. The other thing you need to do, by default, the AppV5 client is not in a coexistence mode. And you do that, you can call set appv client configuration or use GP. But you need to update, and this needs to be set to 1 so that it's in what we call migration mode. So you have those two pieces together. Now the AppV5 client is operating in a coexistence mode. Now, I'll show you something here that we can look at. This is very handy for troubleshooting on the client. If you're doing a publishing refresh and you're not getting the package, You know, it could be something on the server, or it could be something on the client. If you open up the server, the publishing server URL in a browser, and you see this, that means in this particular case that I've got Word Viewer is published to me as the user. If I didn't see it, it would not be published. So I'd go troubleshoot on the server. If I saw it here, but then I don't see it on the client, then I can troubleshoot on the client. So all this does is tells me what XML the publishing server returns for me as the user. So it looks like this got published correctly. Actually, I'm going to copy this. Now using PowerShell, what we'll do is you notice we don't have, or let's add. Okay, we're going to add an AppV publishing server. We'll call it demo. Here's why I saved the URL. Okay, so we've added it. Now if we get it, we get that. We can pipe this through. Now what's going to happen is that that publishing server, this is a publishing refresh. So if you had multiple publishing servers added to this client, you could perform this operation. They basically iterate through all of them, and they do a publishing refresh. So how does this look, you know, to the user? It really doesn't look any different. We've got the shortcut. If I double-click on the shortcut, however, the first time, obviously, the package is going to be added to the machine. It's got to stream down from the publishing server, and it's launched. So from the user's point of view, there's no difference whatsoever. They're continuing to use it normally. Now, if we take a look, you can see that it now exists. It came in from that location that we specified. You also see that it's published to me as the user. I could have published it globally to the machine. In that case, this would be set to true. And what that would mean is that any user who logs into this machine gets it. The other thing is if you look at percent loaded, it was 76%. Let's see here. It's now 100% loaded. And you can see if I launch it again, so I'll shut it down. Once it's on the machine, it launches as fast as native. That's the other thing that we changed from 4.6 to 5.0. In 4.6, we had a launcher. In 5.0, you run the XE directly yourself. And so if you looked at the shortcut, this would actually point to an executable. All right, so now suppose that let's say that this particular user is having a problem with Word Viewer. So you want to actually remove it from the machine. So we're going to basically go, we're going to unpublish it from that user. And let's just remove it altogether. All right. So let's take a look. Yep, so it doesn't exist. How does this look to the user? Doesn't really look any different. If they now launch this, they're right back to using 4.6. So this gave you the ability to basically roll them back seamlessly. They report a problem. You can go back. Maybe it's some additional testing. Maybe you need to add a script. You need to do something a little bit more to make it work in the environment. This is what gives you that capability. Now, before we jump out here, I've been asked a number of times on the client how we handle group policy. And people always ask, you know, can I just push out group policy for virtual applications? So I'm just going to show you very quickly, and then we're just about done here. how AppV5 uses group policy. So if you go look in the registry, under AppV, so if you look in the subsystem, under the virtual registry, there's this thing here called pass-through paths, okay? What pass-through paths allow you to do is, for those particular paths, is ignore what's in the package or the user namespace. So remember that AppV blends three namespaces. There's the system, the package, and then the user namespace. And anything in the user overrides package, and package overrides system. But if you want to administer a virtual app using GP, you want the virtual app to always see what's in the system. So what this does is that you buy these, that's this one value, which is this type, this multi-SZ type, that has a number of strings in here. These are the defaults, by the way, if you installed AppV5 client. And if you look at the last two, two of these are for the policy, for the machine or for the current user. So now, if you didn't want to use GP, you could go in, you could edit this and remove that, remove this pass-through capability for this particular path. You can also add other paths, but you have to use this cautiously because it means that changes that the virtual application makes to the system go through to the system. They don't get trapped in the virtual environment. Okay. So I just want to show you that just because I've been asked many, many times, and this was just a good opportunity to let you know. All right. So wrapping this up, we've got about 8 minutes to go. So coexistence, again, the big benefit is it allows you to stage your migration over a prolonged period of time if necessary. It gives you granular control by application. And the how, I think we've covered the how, especially the last two, yep. So in terms of migrating to AppV5, there are kind of two ways that we've seen customers be successful in this. And you know, the method one uses coexistence. Actually, they both use coexistence. But method one is to convert the applications and deploy them one at a time as they convert them. Method two is to actually resequence the applications with the 5.0 sequencer. And again, you whatever the cadence is, the update cadence is for the packages, what you want to do is you can stay on that update cadence, but you can just resequence them and push them out. Or, for example, you may have packages that are really big that aren't handled by 4.6. You can push them out this way as well. So you can maybe right out of the gate go this way and then gradually convert. So you can combine these however you see fit. But the key thing is use client coexistence. Okay, key takeaways. I think we've covered these. What is and is not supported. You all have access to the slide, so you can go and review that. AppV vNext, I'll just mention a quick blurb. I mentioned it at the beginning, we're continuing to invest in AppV. SP1 just released in the spring. We're working, MDOP gets updated twice a year. We're continuing to work on future releases. But this is what's coming up next, actually. We're going to support shell extension. I mentioned that virtual application extension, internally, we can continue to add. Shell extensions, you know, right-click functionality. So basically, it integrates with Windows Explorer. So you can deploy shell extensions using AppV. It's a great way to push them out. VC runtime support. What this means, this is actually one of the big pain points, and this is a lot of work that we've done behind the covers to help our customers. So historically, it's been really challenging to know what the VC runtime or side-by-side dependency is for a virtual app and what should be pushed out, what should be, you know, first installed on the clients and so forth. It turns into a very big grid if you let it. What we do now is we capture everything, put it in the package, and when you push the package out, the runtime actually gets pushed out with the package. So it's very, it's for the sequencing process, it's very turnkey, and it's kind of foolproof when you push the package out. And the last thing is that we're also focused on is publishing refresh user experience. During the publishing refresh experience, the user doesn't know that applications are being added. The start menu can flicker as shortcuts are being added. We've improved that user experience. So these are just three of the things. We've also, you know, obviously focused on performance, on robustness, feedback from customers. We've got a number of DCRs in the product. But this is coming out really soon now. Other related content, there is that I'll highlight the one from this afternoon at 4:45. Andy Surratt's going to be giving that one. And it's around Office, which is kind of the killer app. A lot of people want to deploy it using AppV. With 2013, we've made big steps, and people wanted 2010. We've added that support in SP1. And Andy will walk people through what the process is this afternoon. Other resources, don't forget to evaluate. Please provide your feedback. If anyone has any of the MDOP surveys, please don't forget to turn those in as you leave. Again, we're using those. We sit down, we review them. We've reviewed them from MMS, from TechEd in North America. We'll review all the ones that we get. From here, and that's for the planning, future planning for MDOP. If you want your voice to be heard, this is your chance. And that's it. So I'll take any questions that anyone has. And if feel free to come up as well if anyone has anything they'd like to ask. So thank you.